The Professional Left is brought to you this week by WearLiberally.com, makers of the Ask Not t-shirt, for all the times we heed the words of JFK and do what we can for our country. Use the Professional Left discount code PL for 10% off your order at WearLiberally.com.
This is the podcast for July 15th, 2011. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Entropy Room at the fabulous Citizens United Casino and Lounge, it's the Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal. Have you taken the pledge, Blue Gal?
Oh, you know, speaking of that, I want everyone to go over to aristocrats.blogspot.com. You'll have to go through this blog is not safe for children screen, which is true. But the Aristocrats, which is Sandy Underpants' wonderful blog, and he's got Iowa's fucking American family frontiers pled. Fuck the gays, fuck the unions, fuck off with the funny looking light bulbs, am I right? And then one of them is fuck the poor. Please initial here. Very, very funny.
It's not widely known that Michelle Bachmann put a little smiley face over the I when she initialed her.
when she signed off on the Ryan budget, she put a little heart over the little Michelle on her.
With her ringing endorsement, like the Liberty Bell was rung in Arizona in 1799.
Oh, man.
And then later, someone read it to her and mentioned that it talked about slavery, and she went, what?
Well, I get to put an asterisk next to everything I vote for or sign.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't count.
Somebody pointed out, first of all, that she's way ahead in Iowa. She's winning in Iowa right now. Like that might be not be
That's
true
a shock.
In here, but
yeah.
But secondly, every time we get flabbergasted by some new, the new horrors of the day, we briefly forget the fact that what outrages us makes absolutely no difference whatsoever to Michelle Bachmann followers. In fact, the more
it encourages them,
the deeper they dig in,
from a Texas newspaper said Rachel Maddow last night did a whole thing about Rick Perry and these really crazy right wing preachers that he's going to have. Yeah. And then she had a reporter on from a Texas newspaper who said, you don't understand the fact that you had this story about Rick Perry and tried to put down the ministers that he's having. That just confirms that they're right in their eyes because, and he didn't have to say because that commie lesbian doesn't like us. That makes it good in God's eyes, So.
Well, and you can sort of watch in the McCain candidacy really showed how close you can come to the event horizon of a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
He came real close. He skimmed right along the edge there with the endorsement he got from Reverend Hagee.
From Hagee,
who's a fucking lunatic.
Yeah, who
believes lots and lots and lots of crazy things, not the least of which is that Adolf Hitler was sent by God to drive the Jews back to Israel,
right,
and that essentially the purpose of having the state of Israel and the purpose of having Jewish people is so that they will build him a bridge to heaven with their bones.
Right.
And needless to say, he is a great and good friend of Senator Joe Fuck You Lieberman.
Yep.
Because they both have the same interest in mind, which is whatever is good for Israel is good for James Hagee and Joe Lieberman, and fuck if it's good for America.
Right up until the time
that
Jesus
moment.
Returns. And then Joe Lieberman has a choice.
Yeah.
He can convert to Christianity or burn in hell for eternity.
But that's this fucking idiot. And this is like the least crazy of all the crazy people that Rick Perry, very much like Randall Flagg in The Stand, gathering in the desert. He's gathering all the fucking crazy preachers in
the desert. Well, and just alone the fact that only Christians are invited to this prayer meeting is that alone should disqualify him from any serious consideration as president of the entire United States of America. It doesn't.
That is the 23rd thing that should disqualify him from any serious.
But
John McCain sought out this lunatic's endorsement, was proud of it, and then somebody took him aside and said, by the way, here's some of the crazy shit this guy actually believes. And since John McCain, by this point, was just a complete whore and a complete burned-out husk of a human being, did the math in his head and said, oh, I'm fucked, and walked that back as fast as he could without looking like a complete hypocrite. So John McCain was perfectly willing to accept the endorsement of this person and live with it for a while until it stunk up his nose so bad he couldn't stand it. But we passed that point, Blue Gal.
Well, we have, but that's what I wanted to ask you about. I was going to read a couple of newsletters tonight from my congressman and soon to be your congressman, John Shimkus, who is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the coal industry, by the way. I think we've talked about that before, and he's also gone before his energy subcommittee in the House and said that God will decide when the world's going to end, and therefore, you know, global warming is not something we need to concern ourselves about because God will never end the world because he promised when the rainbow came and Moses came that he wouldn't do, you know, it just goes on and on and on. And he did this in a congressional hearing, not at a church.
It's a fire next time.
So,
And by the way, if I may just make one brief aside, it is quite possible that in the next year I will have completed the record of the person who has gone furthest from one end of the political spectrum to the other.
Oh, yeah. Going from Jan Schakowsky to John Shimkus in 1 year. As you've really done it. I went from living in suburban Boston to Birmingham, Alabama. So I did pretty bad, but
that's true.
Yeah, but yeah, no, you're definitely making a leap to the right over there. But what I wanted to bring up about
Go ahead. Don't think I'm not going to hold it over your head.
You are. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to say, well, why don't you run for Congress?
That'll shut me up. Anyway, as I was saying,
it's going to be an interesting marriage. Let me just say, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Two very, very smart people who don't have any problem outwitting each other in the power struggle that marriage often is.
It's what now? You know, look, I'm going to have to put an asterisk next marital footnote about the power struggle going on. And let's just say
we're a power couple, aren't we? Hey, John Shimkus.
Yeah.
He used the words clean and nuclear right next to each other.
Yeah, as if they belong together.
These two things belong together. And in his subsequent newsletter, he said that historic deficits and debt now threaten...
What, Blue Gal?
Job creators.
Oh, my God.
With higher taxes.
Those poor fucking job creators.
To pay for Washington's spending binge. Because he's not part of that at all. You know, the fact he's been a congressman for 20-some years... No, he's... At the same time, aggressive regulations burden the economy. Hey!
So true.
So his solutions are, you know, and also the stimulus was an abject failure. Mm-hmm. Never, and he doesn't mention that one-third of the stimulus was tax cuts forced on Obama by the Republicans.
Because that would be inconvenient, wouldn't it?
For Chris Matthews, he asked the question tonight, which is, you know, tax cuts don't create jobs.
No,
we kind of have figured this out. Mm-hmm. But here's John Shimkus saying that, you know, we have this jobs crisis. And so what we need is to reduce regulations, more free trade agreements, maximize domestic energy production.
Yes. Thank God. I think he's talking about massive solar farms and batteries Arizona, right?
There is lip service to that, actually, wind farms and solar, right after he says clean nuclear.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. It's in order here. Clean nuclear. Oh, yeah, solar and wind, too. And, of course, we have to pay down our unsustainable debt, which, given that he voted for the Bush tax cuts, two unfunded wars, the Medicare prescription drug benefit, and the Ryan budget.
You kind of
wonder. No, this is Washington's problem. But here's my point about Shimkus that I want to ask you about.
That he's going to get reelected?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's in a gerrymandered district. I mean, yeah. Forget it. And he doesn't have town halls, so there's not going to be any embarrassing YouTubes of him, ever. He's definitely smart enough to realize, if I go before anyone who needs government assistance, which a lot of his district does, either as they're either on Medicaid or Medicare or farms or Social Security or what, if he goes before any of them, there will be an embarrassing YouTube, period. So he just doesn't do it. He just doesn't have town hall meeting. And he has what does he call them? I can't remember what he calls them.
2 minutes hate?
No, he has help desks, congressional help desks, which are, you know, some little local assistant Yeah, you know, some 23-year-old sitting there at the phone, available to help you get your Social Security disability pushed through, which is the number one question that is brought before Congress people by their constituents. Help me get on disability is the number one thing.
But that, even that's constituent service. That's constituent services. That's not town hall meeting.
No, it's not.
Constituent service is you're having problems with your zoning. You're having problems with your, you know, getting, you want your son in or daughter into West Point.
Right.
And you want your Social Security disability
check. Right. Your mom's turning 100 and she wants a letter from the speaker, whatever. Right.
Every congressman who serves more than one term does that.
Right. No big deal. No big deal.
Town halls are where you get to listen to your constituents bitch.
Yeah.
En masse, which, of course, you know, a coward like Jim Kiss is never going to do.
No, he's never going to do it. And it, well, and he doesn't represent his district. He represents coal. And that's, you know, he has more money from the coal industry than any other congressperson. So by a factor of the next person down from him getting coal money has five figures donated to him from the coal industry, Shimkus has six figures. It's more than $10,000. It's like huge, twice as much. And he's the Republican chairman of the subcommittee on energy independence, blah blah blah. You know, so we get, and that's not 100% accurate, but it's he's on the one of the energy subcommittees, of course.
He's a fundamentalist Dominionist.
And he's a fundamentalist Dominionist, yeah. But my point about Shimkus is, here is one thing that Shimkus is not. Shimkus is not a Tea Party originated Republican.
Right.
He's just a run of the mill, been there for decades, you know, as long as I can remember. I go back 3 years, but I know he was congressman for a long time before I moved here. He's not Tea Party, but he's spewing, you know, reduce regulation and move on, you know, pay down our unsustainable debt at all costs kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so to pretend, as we talked about last week, as David Brooks said, you know, that 4 weeks ago, the Republican Party was taken over by lunatics.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Can we please clean them out of the restaurant now and ask them to leave? You know, no.
Someone left the cake out in the rain, blue gal.
Well, it took so long to bake it. I don't think that I can take it. All right. Mm-hmm. So, no, this started a long time ago. A lot of this craziness started a long time ago. That's my point.
Yep.
And now we have, as Juan Kett so beautifully put it, Mitch McConnell quits debt talks, tells Obama to just do whatever so GOP can blame him for it already. And that's what's going on there. You know, I mean, do you have anything you want to say about the debt ceiling?
Two things. Mm-hmm. One, that there is absolute overlap. This is a poor analogy because it's been overused, but this is a very close to, you know, Germany 1920s, in that you have industrialists who are backing basically thugs in brown shirts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And as long as the, you know, Tea Party is screaming about regulation, you know, government's too big, government regulation, man, gotta fucking shut this fucker down, and off, you know, worrying about, you know, gays and man-on-dog sex and whatever the hell else they're frightened about this week, that serves the interests of the people who pay for the party.
Right.
Which are, you know, Dick Armey, Citizens United, American Crossroads, U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Koch Brothers, the billionaire oligarchs, the you know, the modern day Nazi Germany industrialists who are paying to have the government destroyed because it is not in their interest. Right. And their interests, and they can walk among each other undifferentiated and pal it up and pretend like they're all in one movement right up until the moment that the teabaggers start taking their own bullshit seriously and say, you know what we should do? Fuck it. Let's just crash the economy. That'll show these bastards. Like, oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute, motherfucker. No, you don't understand. That's my fucking stock portfolio we're talking about. That's my investment we're talking about. So that's when the call gets blown into Mitch McConnell from his real corporate masters that tells him, look, if you want to serve in the Senate ever again, you better walk your ass over and make peace with Barack Obama. You better give him whatever the fuck he wants, because these crazy sons of bitches have taken it too far. And that's when you realize, which is something liberals have always known, the base of the Republican Party is a bunch of ignorant, bigoted, chumps. They keep falling for this bullshit over and over again. Like, yeah, we're all in this together right up until it comes to who gets voted off the island, who gets in the lifeboat and who doesn't. And you're sitting there holding your dick going to you know, the Koch brothers, I thought we were pals, man. I thought we were buddies. No, dude, you're a chump. If you're a Republican and it's 2011, you're a fucking chump. Or you're a billionaire. So pick one. Mm-hmm. The second thing is Shimkus's district. If you think about this, you know, one thing that these negotiations have demonstrated and the absolute adherence of the Democratic base to Barack Obama, the fact that nobody has deserted the party. People bitch. I bitch. You bitch. People bitch all the time. But nobody's leaving the party. Mm-hmm. Shimkus is vulnerable. Hmm. If the Democratic Party were willing to spend whatever the hell Shimkus spends to beat him in his own district and actually just take the crazy shit that he says, because it's that's the beauty of it, because it's like monoculture plants. You know, this is why you want biodiversity in a party and mm-hmm, in an ecosystem. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's no biodiversity on the right anymore. One disease that will knock out Shimkus will knock out a 100 other congressmen.
It's like live oak disease. It really is. It really
it'll
is.
Sweep
it
right
spreads through all the trees. Yeah.
There's nothing to stop it. So pick Shimkus or pick somebody else and really pour an assload of money into beating him. Really break his ass. Pour $1 million in that district and run the best goddamn, you know, hire all your Hollywood friends and mm-hmm. run the best goddamn, this guy's crazy, and he's after your Social Security, and come after him hard, mm-hmm. really fucking hard, and build an entire case against this kind of politician. And I'd be happy to be, you know, your congressional representative. But what people don't realize is they're so far out over their skis now.
Yeah.
They're actually vulnerable to attack because they have – you saw this. I mean, you saw the entire Republican Party walk off a cliff in the last week mm-hmm. because Eric Cantor wants to be the Speaker of the House. And you have all these petty, stupid, vindictive, mini Machiavellians who never actually read Machiavelli or never read Sun Tzu, never read a goddamn book on strategy in their life.
Right.
Think they know what they're doing. And they don't know what they're doing. And they have been completely fucking played.
All you had to do was watch Star Trek, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
You don't have to read Machiavelli to understand strategy. I mean, and everyone makes fun of Obama and Spock, but really, he's not doing detailed Machiavellian stuff with this. This is play it out for time, like Kirk did a million times out there, with his shields down. Put your shields down. Make him think you're vulnerable. And then wham him. And that's what he did.
I will not budge past this point.
Right.
I will self-destruct this thing.
Yeah.
Because there are certain things I'm just not going to do. And you will
be answerable to your corporate overlords mm-hmm. if you fuck this up.
And really,
I'm not going to save you. The horse's head is already in your bed.
Yeah.
You woke up to that today, you know. Yeah.
And this is a case where everything the GOP has done since before the Paul Ryan, let's get rid of Medicare mm-hmm. you know, suicide pact, mm-hmm. which directly followed the, oh my God, Barack Obama's going to destroy Medicare. Apparently they didn't learn that people like Medicare.
Yeah.
So if you run an entire election based on Barack Obama's coming for your Medicare, we must stop him. And the first thing you do out of the box is, hey, we have a better plan. Let's get rid of it completely. Because that's what you believe your mandate is. Everything that the right has done has been catastrophically stupid. I mean, if I'm Barack Obama and I'm not, I get up every morning, look at the paper, and go, I cannot believe these fuckers keep leaving gift baskets on my front doorstep.
Yeah.
You know?
But are you concerned at all about the fact that Obama did put Medicare and Social Security on the table?
Very much so. I'm not arguing about the ethics of it.
Yeah. I think that was unethical too. Yeah.
I'm arguing I think it was obscene. I do believe that the math simply dictates that Social Security can be fixed pretty easily.
Yeah, raise the cap. That's it. Boom.
Yeah. Boom. Done. And you know, just go read Truth with Jokes. You'll see the whole picture. Medicare is more complicated, but it can be fixed. I mean, these things are not insurmountable. But if your basic assumption is these things should be destroyed, then you can't negotiate with good faith with someone who thinks they shouldn't be. And if you fix it from the standpoint of
the first thing we have to do is muzzle Big Pharma. And if it means making them the enemy in this fight, go ahead and do it.
Fine.
Because people are pissed at the drug companies anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're going to have to pick that battle. And I hope that Obama picks that battle in his second term when he has nothing to lose and says, look, pharma, you know, you can't have whatever you want for your drugs from Medicare. You can't have that and Medicaid. We can't afford it. And make it about that. We cannot cut benefits to individuals, but we sure as hell can cut your 5,000% profit per pill on whatever you decide you want to charge the American people for drugs that they need. You know, and that's going to be painful politically. I don't think he can do that in his first term. But I'm hoping he makes that choice in his second
term. And I'm a liberal. He's a moderate, right-leaning, Clinton-esque.
Bankster-loving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Republican. You know, he wants to hang with the Republicans he knew in Springfield and Harvard.
Yep.
That's what he wants.
Reasonable people.
He wants to be
people.
In with them.
Yeah, yeah.
He wants to be in with those folks. And you know what? That's fine. That's not my politics, but he's the choice I have. Mm-hmm. But it's him, you know, he has, as a moderate centrist Republican corporatist, a Rockefeller Republican.
Yep.
Who also has been.
And that's really good. He's a Rockefeller Republican. He's not a Democrat. Absolutely.
No.
Yeah.
And who's been very good for gay rights relative to every other president in history and has done other good things that I approve of and some things I roundly criticize. However, he has been gifted, you know, complete berserker Attila the Hun lunatics on the right. And who keep making, you know, classic linear strategy mistakes. They just run straight at you every time. You know, there's an old joke about, you know, the linebacker who is trained to hit the tackling dummy every time. And one day he just goes flying on past and hits his head on the goalpost and passes out because the guy just stepped out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, these guys only know how to do direct frontal assault. And once you figure out that they have no strategy other than rah, they're fairly easy to beat the shit out of. They have millions of people behind them, which is the real problem. Mm-hmm. You know, the real problem with the economy is a jobs recession, not a Wall Street recession, not a deficit problem. The real problem
Taxes are too high and there's too much regulation problem. No, yes,
not at
right.
all. And the real problem with politics is we have too many goddamn idiots and stupid people and bigots involved in the process, and too many centrists who enable them. And that's the long-term problem. And you know, over the course of 20, 30, 40 years, they're going to die off. Mm-hmm. So demographics, you know, and the merciless reality of the mortality and morbidity tables are on our side. But short term, these people are going to be a real problem because they want bloody, you know, nuclear trench warfare every day. They like that.
I'm going to be interested to see what happens in Obama's second term when there has to be a pivot within the Fox News machine. I mean, and we don't know what's going to happen with the Fox News machine either. I mean, we could go in a whole other podcast talking about Rupert. There's going to have to be some sort of pivot eventually in Barack Obama's second term to where Obama's a lame duck. And all of a sudden, it's not about him anymore. You know, it's about 2014 or 2016, excuse me. And as soon as it's not about the black guy, Unless we really luck out and get to run Stokely Carmichael for president in 2016.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I think that's the death of the Tea Party right there. When the bigots don't have that to aim at anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, they'll have
a lot of this is about Barack Obama being black. It really is.
It is. It is. But that's like saying, you know, that it's really bad to get drunk when you're full of heroin.
Right.
You know.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
You know, all of this is a rerun. Bigger, larger, louder, 3D THX 1138 sound or THX sound of the 90s.
Of what happened with Clinton. Yeah, absolutely.
All of it. Yeah. It's exactly – they have nothing but that playbook.
Yeah.
But I agree with you that once the black guy is out of the picture – but I think politically he's a lame duck the minute he takes the oath of office.
Yeah.
Because elections tend to start earlier and earlier, as you notice.
Oh, yeah. And 2016 will start in 2012. Sure it will.
Yeah. But secondly, he'll be a black guy right up until the minute he leaves the office.
Yes, he will. And he'll be the president until he leaves office. Right. So, yeah, there is that.
I'm wondering at the end of his second term who he's going to pardon.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's too early to be talking about that. But I wonder at the end of his term, I'm assuming he'll get a second term. I'm wondering at the end of whichever term he's is his, you know, last term.
Yeah, who he decides to pardon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'll be an interesting story.
Or will he just say, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do"? Oh, my Obot is showing. Oh, no.
Oh, the Obot. Don't let the Obot out.
Anyway, moving on.
Oh, I just wanted to read that comment from Balloon Juice that we talked about from Cornerstone, who is absolutely wonderful. The Republicans took irony out in the backyard and shot it fucking dead. They offered irony a smoke first, but hypocrisy took the smoke instead. Then they killed hypocrisy, too.
That's just
so perfect.
You know, this is a golden age for Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert.
It is, and that's one blessing. Count your blessings, people. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, and I think we ought to talk just a little bit about that, because we addressed a little bit about how we felt that Barack Obama, whether it was a fake out or not, betrayed us.
Yeah, he did.
And where we channel that anger is going to be really important going forward. And I think we have to channel that anger toward issues rather than people, because that's the Tea Party's mistake.
Yep.
Is, you know, Mitch McConnell has let the has taken their ransom note and flushed it down the crapper. Nope, it was never here. We never had it, you know, just and blaming Obama for no debt reduction isn't going to cut it with these Tea Party people. They feel betrayed.
Yeah.
As betrayed as we do.
Yeah.
And they're going to go out and primary their freshman congressman now, you know, because of this?
Yes, they will.
And they will.
Freshman congressmen and senators, and they will. And remember, McConnell's guy lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the people that McConnell, person or people McConnell was backing were Tea Party, were swept aside. And this is not the government as designed by the founders, where citizens will, you know, come into office, serve, you know, a short period of time and leave. These are career politicians.
Absolutely. They like their cushy jobs. So it's – and once you're in, you like it there. So you like all the perks and you want to be part of the Washington problem.
Oh.
But, you know, depending on a personality rather than on issues, issues will always be there. Ideas will always be there.
Yep.
And it's easy to fall into the trap of – this guy will save us. Oh, he's a Kennedy. He'll save us. Oh, he's a, you know, and it doesn't work that way.
No.
I don't think. I mean,
I think occasionally it does. I think occasionally a person comes along that is perfectly matched for their time.
But we had a letter a few weeks ago about when the whole Anthony Weiner thing was going on. Someone wrote us and said, "Please tell Bernie Sanders to keep his pants on. He's the only one left who speaks for me."
Well,
you know, and I said, I can't tell you that, because not that Bernie Sanders, God forbid, should have dirty pictures on Twitter, but he's going to break your heart, too. I mean, you're talking to somebody, Kennedy 80, Kucinich, you know, 2008. Kucinich 2008, damn. And then he wanted Ron Paul for a running mate. I was, you know, and this was New Hampshire. This was like he was just running out of money, you know, and looking for the internet money bomb that mentioning Ron Paul as a running mate might bring him.
Well, and let's not forget the idea. I forget who the quote comes from, but the greatest liar in the world is memory.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as architects, again, I don't know who I'm quoting here, architects are free to put vines on their buildings.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, old whores and old politicians get classier with age. Let's not forget that the Bill Clinton that we look back on fondly.
Yeah.
Because it's helpful. It's helpful to say, you know, this all happened before. I do it all the time. I'm a sinner. We're all sinners here, baby. You know, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has a political blind spot. I have one. It's as big as all outdoors. But you look back on Clinton and go, you know, Clinton was this and Clinton was that. And look at all the golden age. And look, he raised taxes. He did those wonderful things that I agree with. He also threw more people off of welfare than anybody in history.
Right.
Which thoroughly pissed me off, which really broke my heart. He also lied.
Yeah.
He also took a mandate I gave him and used it cavalierly and carelessly because he thought he was smarter than everybody else and fucked up. He also knew he was being hunted by his enemies and took his dick out and waved it at them and said, I dare you to catch me. That right. Gary Hart
right.
syndrome.
Like Gary Hart.
He also pardoned a lot of really despicable, scummy people on his way out of office.
Well, and killed a couple of people that, you know, arguably really didn't know what was happening to them in Arkansas.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, death penalty bill just...
Did Bill Clinton break my heart? Yes, he did. Did he break the heart of every activist I know? Every anti-hunger, human rights, welfare, poverty, et cetera, et cetera, activist I know? Yes, he did. Do we remember him fondly now as possibly a great, certainly a good president?
Well, good Lord, Jimmy Carter. I mean, we primary Jimmy Carter, for crying out loud.
What do you mean, we, blue gal? Another thing I'm just going to hold over your head. But let's be clear. We're in the middle of a presidency where every issue is urgent and every passion is inflamed. And we're looking at George Bush and just we're a little bit drunk. You know, the present moment is always intoxicating and passionate, as well it should be. That's why it's the present. But when we look back at presidents that we now admire in hindsight, even, you know, remember, there's a lot of varnish on that from the passage of years. And I don't want liberals / Democrats / progressives, whatever you want to call that confederation, to sin the same sins as Republicans. I want us to remember our past honestly. I want us to remember what it was really like in the 90s, really like in the 80s, and not pretend that there was, you know, that Bill Clinton was some kind of saint.
Right.
He wasn't. He had huge flaws. He, you know, Sister Soldier moments called that for a reason.
Yep.
He picked a prominent, you know, person on the left to punch in the face to suck up to centrist voters. If you ever see the last two-thirds of the Century of the Self documentary, it's about how Bill Clinton figured out how to use micropolling and small bore issues to win the suburban soccer mom vote. He listened to Alan Greenspan way too much. You know, he got rid of Glass-Steagall. He did lots of terrible things. He's the one who fucked the gays over in the military. He signed DOMA.
Exactly. He's the one that made Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Absolutely.
And that's one set of lessons to take away from Clinton. But another set of lessons is he did all these things that the right approved of. And in exchange, they hunted him like a dog and they impeached him. That's how crazy these fuckers were 15 years ago. And they've only gotten worse. Looping back to, if you're still in the Republican Party and you haven't learned any of this lesson, you haven't learned anything from Clinton, you haven't learned anything from Bush, and you're still voting Republican, you're a lost cause, man. Mm-hmm. You're a lost fucking cause. I have no interest in what you have to say about anything because you clearly are either stupid or bigoted or crazy or a billionaire. And, you know, if you're a centrist, I got you.
Yeah.
I own your ass because you at least are willing to tie your hammock between two trees. And I'm going to spend the rest of my political life pointing out to you that one of those trees is a lie. And I'm going to make you admit it. And that's where I believe we can actually advance the progressive cause by going after the center, by going after the centrists, people who want to create false equivalencies. That's the people.
Well, and I emailed you a
video.
Video. Yeah. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it yet or not, but there are people in Florida. There are people in Florida doing a YouTube series called "It Gets Worse," and it's about Rick Scott and people talking about Rick Scott and how he's made things worse. But the first video is this real estate agent saying, "Well, Rick Scott is extreme on the right, and the problem is we've got." Somebody on the left just as far and he literally says that. Like he said, we got Rick Spagat going way extreme to the right, and then we've got whoever over here extreme on the left, and you know what we really need is a good strong centrist, but he can't name anybody. If there was someone as far left as Rick Scott is far right, they would be in elected office, A. B, nationalizing the oil companies and pharma. You decided that they were going to make the Congress atheist or something like that? We're going to have flying spaghetti monster prayers in the Congress,
I have done this on a whiteboard with markers to centrist friends of mine, saying, okay, here's two points on a spectrum representing where the Republicans and Democrats were in 1976, pick a date, 78, whatever the hell they were. Here's where the right has gone. and he'd draw a very vivid and sharp and terrifying straight line up at a 45-degree angle to the right. They've gone straight to hell. They've gone straight into Crazyville. Mm-hmm. Now, for you to maintain a centrist position, for you to pretend that – because you don't believe anything. You just believe whatever's in the middle is right. For you to believe that, then the left must have gone as hard to the left as the right went to the right, because otherwise the center itself would have radically moved to the right, and you would be a liar. You'd be a fool. You'd be a coward. You'd be a dupe. So I can name you the congressmen who are fundamentalist dolts, who are radical right Christian idiots, who are beholden to oil company.
Who are elected officials. Yeah.
Yes. Who are from president on down, president, vice president on down, for you to maintain a centrist position in that, with the right being that, and we will both agree that is true, then the left must have gone so far to the left that there must be 30 elected communist senators.
Yep.
Please name them for me. To correspond to all the right-wing, conservative, fundamentalist, dominionist demagogues, there must be 50 radical atheists mm-hmm. in the Congress who want to abolish prayer everywhere and force God completely out of the country and abolish private worship of anything anywhere.
Please, the only problem I have with that, Driftglass, is that not all of us commies are atheists.
I know, but that's my point. My point being, there are economic extremists on the right. Please name me the economic extremists on the left. There are social extremists on the right who kill abortion doctors. Please name people on the left who bomb churches. You know, and if you can't do that, then you must acknowledge the left has not gone, you know, at a 45-degree angle leftward. In fact, it's gone rightward.
Yes.
So the center itself has moved. And I have demonstrated this, to quote Humphrey Bogart from the Caine Mutiny, using geometric logic, Plugal. I sat and very carefully laid out the case for why you cannot be a centrist anymore, because the center moved to where far to the right, where Republicans used to be. Because the right has moved so far to the right, and the left has moved to the right. And I proved this and put my little marker down and said, well, and the answer was, and then nothing. Because people like that don't want to face the consequences, the moral consequences of that conclusion, which is you have to change your mind. You have to pick a side. You have to stand for something rather than bitch on the sidelines that everybody sucks, everybody's a politician, everything's awful, both sides are sucky. That's just a lazy position. It's a coward's position.
Yes, right.
And the person I demonstrated it to is a Democrat, is a member of the regular Democratic organization, and would not acknowledge. He would acknowledge right at the point where I said, and therefore. And then just said, I don't want to talk about it.
La, 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 la. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it because, you know, it basically, I want to sit in my house and be Archie Bunker and not have you make my brain hurt. So fuck you. I don't want to talk about it anymore. And so it can be done. You can demonstrate clearly. You know, you can take 5 minutes with a whiteboard and erasable markers and demonstrate why a centrist position is completely illegitimate. And centrists will run away from that at the speed of light.
I want to repeat something. I don't know if we'll put this in the podcast or not, but I want to repeat something that you said to me earlier this week that really impressed me. Mm. And you said we were talking about the Supreme Court. We were talking about Clarence Thomas, and we were kind of getting upset, both of us. And you looked at me and you said, I am voting for Barack Obama no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. I mean, I've had a lot of comments at my blog this week about this, and I'm sorry that people feel strongly in a different direction than I do. You know, families fight, and I consider everyone who comments at my blog a member of my family, and you always will be. And people can disagree with us on this. You know, they can. But if it means saying hello to President Perry, I'm not willing to stand by principles and watch that happen know that I did that. I've done that already. I've done that a couple times.
And if your principle – I'm not saying you, Blue Gal, but if a reader or a listener's principle is, no, we need a President Perry to crash the system –
yeah.
And start all over again. That communist, that sort of doctrinaire communist notion of, you know, you destroy the system.
Yep.
And sure, millions might die, but a better world will emerge. Well, you know, if you honestly hold that opinion, that's fine. But say that.
Yeah.
You know, if you really think the only hope for this country is to completely destroy the political, cultural, market system, and embrace all of the disastrous chaos that will ensue, the deaths of millions, tens of millions of people.
But you know, Driftglass, one of the things I've noticed about people who sincerely say that is they're wearing, male or female, they're wearing lots and lots of black eyeliner. Yeah. And they have a cushion in their lives that they may resent, but they will never hit bottom because they're not responsible for anybody else yet in their lives. The people that I've heard say, no, crash the system, let it burn, let it die, so that we can be really clear on Gitmo and clear on X, Y, and Z, that these horrible, horrible things that are really horrible. I get it. You know, but we need to crash the system to make a statement for the Constitution, man, and Gitmo is a big deal to me too. Don't get me wrong. And we're not going to get any closer to resolving the Gitmo issue with one more Clarence Thomas on the court ever.
Or President Perry or President Bachman.
Perry. President Perry isn't going to release the Gitmo prisoners.
No, he will destroy the country. And if that's what you want, great. But please, I'm not saying I approve of it. I'm saying that please honestly say, I believe the only thing that's left to do is destroy the country and start over. Because that's what you're really saying. What you're really saying is Bush wasn't bad enough.
Yep.
People need to be beaten even harder. They need to be deprived even more. They need to be starved even more. We need to
I want you to turn to your kids and say that. Well, I don't have any kids. Really?
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
Oh.
That's strange. Yeah. And
I'm not. I'm getting into issues here I didn't want to get into, but it is. Oftentimes, the people that are saying these kind of things are not yet invested in the long term future, and they will be. But
exactly. And if you are,
I'm not being paid. I'm trying not to be patronizing here. Or
because I was that person when I was 20, 22, 23. Yeah. I absolutely was. That's how I got to read everything Ayn Rand ever wrote. You know, I was a voracious political philosopher who didn't know anything about the real world, who learned a lot about it really fast. But I have a great deal of empathy and joy that a person takes that much on their backs and learns at the age of 20, 21, 22.
And cares that much to absorb it all. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But if you're a grizzled veteran, and you're out there arguing every day that, no, fuck it, just let it all burn.
Does that get them laid? Is that the point?
Well, possibly. You know, there's the bad boy, the cynic. You know, I will balm him. I will bind up his wounds and make him feel better about this mad old world of ours. I remember when I was, you know, 20-something, buying survival books. Because I thought Ronald Reagan was going to destroy the world. I thought Ronald Reagan was going to start a nuclear war. In the back of my mind, I thought, you know, I should be – I wasn't hoping he'd do it, but I was frightened that he'd do it, and I was prepared for it. I was prepared as you can be as an adolescent or a post-adolescent. So I get it. I get looking down the barrel of history and seeing nothing staring back at you but an abyss. I do understand that. But if you're not that, you know, young man or young woman, and you're a sort of a grizzled veteran, if you're in your middle age and you're arguing for screw it, let it all burn, then say that. Mm-hmm. Quit pretending. Mm-hmm. Quit equivocating. Quit bullshitting around the edges. Because if you're arguing for primarying Barack Obama and handing the election over to Perry or Bachman, if that's what you're arguing for, then that's what you're arguing for. And I put people who argue for a third party at the national level as some sort of salvation in this camp generally. Not at the local level. I strongly believe in local, regional, statewide third parties. But on a national level, all third parties ever do is drain votes away from the party that's closest to their ideology. That's all they ever do. And so if you're advocating, if you're sitting around jerking off waiting for a third party to show up, you know, with $1 billion and enough electoral votes lined up to take the White House, that's never, ever going to happen. I get the impulse. And again, if you're 20 something and you're thinking about it, that's great. But if you're a middle-aged grown-up person and you're really thinking, what
you're old farts like us.
Yeah, exactly. What we need, man, is a third party. No, what you really mean is we need coalition government.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. And that's why we have five parties in this country.
That's how we have a progressive caucus in the House. Absolutely. Yeah. And they've been kicking ass lately. They really have. Kudos to the progressive caucus. They're really voting together.
And they're the traditional liberal Democratic Party.
Absolutely.
And then we have the traditional Republican Party, which are now called Blue Dog Democrats. And now we have a corporate party that's split 60-40 between the two parties.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the crazy party, which are the teabaggers, which are made up of fundamentalists on one side and bigoted morons on the other.
And billionaires who are using them. Yeah.
And so we do have a form of coalition government in that these five or six various sub-parties do move around and do exchange members and so forth. But there is never going to be a third party in this country. And if you're holding out hope for one, what you're really saying is, I want to cripple the Democratic Party enough so that Republicans can run the table.
Just
say that. I disagree with you, but at least be honest enough to say that you want this country destroyed and rebuilt. And then embrace the fact, acknowledge the fact that what you're talking about is the death and destruction of the entire global economy and millions and millions and millions of innocent people, and that's worth it to you.
Yeah.
Or your ideology. If you're ideologically if your ideological purity and your starched white skirts are worth that price, say that. And have that argument. But if you're not, quit lurking around the edges bitching that everything sucks and everything's awful. If you're not in the getting shit done business, go be someplace else.
Well, I think it goes back to what we said before about it being easy when the other person is when the other party's in office, just because then all you have to say is, "Oh fuck, it all sucks, man, because Bush is in office." Mm-hmm. And everybody agrees with you, and everybody likes your comment on Facebook, and everybody goes behind you, and you have a million friends in the naked city, you know?
And then you win.
And then you win. What's the plan? Yeah. And then, he's not doing everything exactly the way I want.
Primaries ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay. And if you're blowing off steam, that's fine. I get blowing off steam. But if you really, honestly, if you've examined your position and really think the best thing for the United States is
primarying Obama. Yeah.
Is a massive agonizing death so that some great libertarian or utopian phoenix can rise from the ashes. Count me out.
Driftglass, what about the people, though, who are just so heartbroken at this point?
You know?
That they can't, like, I don't even know if I've had people email me and I don't know what to say to them about. I'm not going to say primary him, or I'm not going to say fight against him or we teach him a lesson, but I'm so heartbroken that I'm not going to vote.
They're
or
grieving.
I'm not going to, you know, participate in democracy this time around.
They're grieving.
Yeah.
I respect,
yeah.
Believe me, you know, we're old enough where people in our loved ones have died.
Yeah.
In our family, in our
mm-hmm.
lives,
mm-hmm.
and have left us, and things have been broken, and we have made mistakes, and we have done things that were, you know, we regret.
Yep.
We both get grief. We both understand grief.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're grieving, then grieve. That's perfectly natural and okay. If you gave your all and it just fell apart and you feel like you've been betrayed, I'm not going to dishonor someone's honorable grief by saying you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't feel that. Grieve. But understand, you know, I hate to be, you know, too touchy-feely here because that's not my style. But grief is a process. Mm-hmm. And you go through stages of it. And if you can step outside yourself just a little bit and realize, I'm never going to love again. I'm never going to marry again. I'm never going to let anybody close enough to me again who could possibly hurt me. You know what? That's a real human reaction. And I respect that.
Well, that's where I am. Not I'm never going to love again, but I am definitely at the point where I'm never going to say the answer is electing this person.
Right.
I think I can honestly say I will never again say the answer to America's problems is vote Joe Schmo, you know, and then we'll be able to get started, because I don't believe that anymore.
Well, we talked about employment and unemployment a little bit, and we'll do a whole podcast on that, I'm sure. But I think it would also be healthy to remind ourselves that we're hiring someone. This is from Dave, the movie Dave.
Yeah.
You know? It's a temp job.
Mm-hmm.
We're hiring people that we hope are competent and do a temp job on our behalf. If they do a reasonably decent job and don't steal too much or fuck up too much, eh, you let them stick around. If they fuck up too much and steal too much and insult, and this is my personal beef, insult my intelligence too much, then you're fired. But I'm hiring a competent public servant, a competent employee to do a job of work. That's all I'm asking them to do. And the job of work is probably the hardest one in the world, but that's, I think, how you can establish a little bit of healthy emotional distance from the frenzy and passion and love and heartbreak that is a political campaign. And if you think this is new or modern, I strongly urge you to look at the way politics has been done since the beginning of time. It's always a charismatic, persuasive.
Oh, go back and read Machiavelli. There's a perfect. Yeah. Go back and read about the Borgias. Let me tell you, absolutely.
Love and fear, man. Love and fear. Yeah. Those are the two drivers. So people who are genuinely grieving over what they feel to be a sense of betrayal, I honor that. I don't disrespect that. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to people who have adopted a permanently cynical fuck everybody. Fine. If you believe that, then go away. Live in the woods. Why are you hanging around, you know, throwing rocks at people if you don't care about people? Go be someplace else. Or if you have a better plan, propose one. Mm-hmm. But just sitting on the sidelines saying fuck you, fuck you, fuck you to everything, it's just so fucking boring.
Yep.
You know, that's the great sin. It's just so completely, you know, beneath notice. It's so pedestrian, so childish.
On that note, that's good. Yeah. Don't be too pedestrian, people. Live mm-hmm. passionately. You know, and if it's mourning and grieving, live passionately. Yeah. If it's fighting for a cause, live passionately.
But remember, you're hiring someone.
And put it in that perspective. Also, the fact that we are in the middle of an economic depression.
Yeah.
Keep that in perspective.
Yeah.
If everybody had a job, we'd be far less focused on this one guy. We really would.
Yeah. There's a contagion of depression, of unemployment depression. I wrote a post about unemployment as pandemic.
Yeah.
But I'm not recommending you go read it, but it's much on my – I don't blog whore on this. I try not to too much. But it's much on my mind that unemployment is a lot like a plague these days. It's no longer in fits and starts. It's a genuine – behaves genuinely like a disease sweeping through the country. And all the aspects of it are there. You know, we shun people who have it. Mm-hmm. We invent mm-hmm. you know, moral failings to blame on the victims of it. And so on and so forth. And I think you raise a really good point, Blue Gal, which is there is an overwhelming economic issue pressing down on us, literally depressing us. Mm-hmm. And you have to factor in that a big part of what people are feeling, a big part of what I'm feeling, is just a sense of, Jesus, this is bad.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, Jesus, this is hard, and I don't think it's going to get a lot easier anytime soon. And that just sucks the life out of you.
Yep.
And it really does. Mm-hmm.
We've got each other. And you and I are... Oh, and I didn't mention my birthday tomorrow.
Yeah.
Saturday is my birthday, everybody.
Happy birthday, Blue Girl.
Thank you. Yeah. And you said that the sexy age is 50. So I'm getting there very, very slowly. But
apex. That's when you hit the next plateau of awesome
sexy.
Oh,
I see. All right. Well, you're there and I'm almost there.
Yeah. I'll drop you a ladder.
Yeah. Help me catch up. I'll be 48 on Saturday, and I want to do a shout-out to my mom, and it is also her birthday. I was born on her birthday, so happy birthday, Mom.
Happy birthday, soon-to-be Mom.
Soon to be. Yep, that's right. She'll be your mother-in-law, and that's an awesome thing in 37 days from mm-hmm. today, from well, the date of this recording.
Except we're not going to share that date with the...
I have to delete the post then. I just mm-hmm. posted it. That we're getting married in 37 days.
Okay. Well, you do what you have to do, Blue Gal. I preserve my time-traveling mysterious deniabilities. So.
Good for you. I respect that.
Yeah. No, you go ahead and publish whatever you like.
We are so glad to have you listening to us. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
We have a website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can listen to us for free and all of our archives for free with no download and no registration. Like our page on Facebook, there is a link at our website to our Facebook page. If you like us on Facebook, I will come over and friend you personally. Facebook listeners, please be aware that the internet kitties do not eat like buttons. So if
No, really?
No, liking us isn't enough. At our website, professionalf.blogspot.com, there is an opportunity to feed the Internet kitties with a $5 contribution. Now that the Internet kitties are living with me down at Casa Blue Gal, your contribution is helping to feed the Internet kitties, let me tell you, and keep their litter box clean. So if you have a chance and a job, we would appreciate a $5 contribution. At our website, professionalf.blogspot.com, there's a button, or there's a P.O. box where you can mail a check. Yeah.
Or more. If you feel the spirit moves you to...
And if the spirit moves you to give $15 or more, we still have some notepads left. In fact, I think we have enough notepads to do this for the rest of the summer. If you send us a contribution of $15 or more, I will mail you a Professional Left notepad, which are the notepads we passed out at Netroots Nation.
Mm-hmm. And it was not the only thing that passed out at Netroots Nation, but that's a different story for a different day.
That's a different story. I don't want to go there. We are on iTunes, and we love our iTunes listeners. And I also want to do a special shout-out to our Crooks and Liars listeners.
Yeah.
This podcast is posted every Saturday night at Crooks and Liars, the most awesome big blog on the whole planet.
It is.
Shout-out to everybody who works so hard on that blog. We love you guys so much.
Thank you, Heather, by the way.
Thanks, Heather. Thank you, John Amato. Thank you, Nicole Bell. Thank you, Dave Nywert. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody. All the site monitors over there, the music club people.
Video Cafe, Nostalgia.
The commenters. You're all just, as the young woman at Liberal Oasis said about me, you're full of unicorns and you poop glitter.
They do. They do. I've used the bathroom after them. They really do.
Speaking of that, we no tinsel on the tree this year for Christmas.
No, that's right. That's right.
I don't want sparkle poop in the kitchen. I just had it.
So, Blue Gal, how are the Internet kitties doing this week?
They're somewhere in the basement looking for Eric Cantor.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2011, Drip Glass Blue Gal Podcast.